Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking at newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, we'll get the latest in health and wellness news, including global research on how long we really spend scrolling. Broadcaster Mary Kennedy on her ambassador role for Irish osteoporosis and why ageing fear is not on her radar. And I meet one of the men featured in a podcast about living with obesity. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, it's been a busy one this week. I had not one but two book conversations this week, one with Jerry Hussey and one with Fiona Brennan, who I'll have to have in to talk about her book Sleep Well, which is out now. Jerry was on about his. So I've been flying from one thing to the next, but feeling really grateful, I must say, that this has become the work I do, getting paid to sit and talk to people. And I went to an event, speaking of talks, for female entrepreneurs this week in the gorgeous surrounds of a place called the Deerstone in Wicklow. It's like an eco hotel, but it has lots of spaces that can be used for gatherings or retreats. And it's all, of course, surrounded by Wicklow nature. And I had seen lots of people sharing it online and couldn't wait to get out there and see it. And may I say, it did not disappoint. So the event I was at was organised by Eva Blake, who's a photographer, and she's taken my photos a couple of times, most recently for my website. And her whole business is called The Visible Business. And I'd really recommend her if you have a business. She really helps you to solidify what it is you're about and put you at ease having your photos taken. I don't find that process very easy. Now, I paid Eva. This is not any kind of influencer plug, but I just think it was worth sharing on. And she also holds these Bliss business events, bringing people together who work for themselves to share insights and just chill out. So she asked me would I speak at the lunch, and I did find that I just sort of bared my soul to these women. That was the kind of atmosphere that was there. And then we ran out of time. So I feel like I left them with the messy middle without giving it a nice tidy up at the end. But however, it was a very safe space and definitely a highlight of my week. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, Emer Daly joins me with the latest in health and wellness news. Emer, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks for having me.
How is all in the world of daily well-being?
I mean, the plates are being spun. But it's fine. We're finding balance, and taking the time to get out and go for a walk can really help when things like that are happening.
Yeah, well, I did get a voice note from you the other night out getting your steps. So you're not just making it up. You are practicing what you preach. But I'm going to use the confines of live radio to put it to you. Why are you not ready for me to come to one of your yoga classes yet? You did speak the last time you were on about doing your yoga teacher training. You're getting lots of offers to host classes, but you're not ready for me in particular to come along just yet.
You in particular, and anybody else who is actually a qualified yoga teacher, I just feel like if the people in the room, I don't know them, I'm like, it's grand. If I mess up, like, I might not have to see you again. But I'll definitely have to have a chat with you again. And if something embarrassing happens, you'll be there to remind me.
Okay, one day I will get there. Let me know when the time is right and that you're comfortable. But I would never be anything but proud, just so we are clear, no matter what happens. Right, of your stories then, up first, the HSE and Department of Health have published new national physical activity and sedentary behaviour guidelines for Ireland. I can already feel people groaning and feeling judged, but the intention is good, right?
The intention is good. And really what this means is that they've put together, you know, the amount and type of physical activity we should be doing and for the age that we are as well, to really get those health benefits, such as, you know, reducing cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes and cancers. You know, if you've ever heard that term before, we're not just doing this for the good of our health. We are moving for the good of our health here. So it's brilliant that they've brought out these guidelines as well for that sedentary behaviour as well, because previous research has actually shown that 23% of primary students and 12% of post-primary students are not meeting the recommended physical guidelines that are already out there at the moment. And for adults in Ireland, they're actually staying in that sedentary activity for about 5 hours of the day. And only 46% of adults in Ireland are getting the recommended physical activity that we should be doing. So that's kind of alarming, but it's really great to know that these guidelines are here and we can see what we should be doing.
And is the recommended amount still 2.5 hours of exercise, and that can be spread out across your week? At a base level.
Yeah, so that would be like at least 2 hours and 30 minutes spread across the week. But we really want to be aiming for that 5 hour kind of mark of moderate exercise, which can be a brisk walk, you know, walking at a fast pace, going for a cycle. Or if you want to move into that kind of vigorous movement, then that would be maybe like a jog or a run, lifting that heart rate a little bit more to really reap the benefits of, you know, doing this for our own health, like I mentioned at the start there.
But I always feel like, you know, sometimes we overcomplicate it. We think, you know, we have to be lifting really heavy weights or going to some really complicated classes. Whereas if we just knit in little bits of movement within our day, it keeps us fresher. It keeps us, you know, more alert through our working day and, mm-hmm. and really can impact our mental health. And if we start thinking a bit more on that rather than this constant focus on weight loss. And I don't know if people are that connected to their cardiovascular health or, you know, their future stroke risk. That's not really what we're thinking of day to day. But if we just break it down, I mean, like I mentioned you, like the other night, you were like, okay, so I could sit down and throw on Netflix, but I'm actually going to go and just walk the block. How did you feel after it?
I felt so much better after. And I was like, that literally took me 20 minutes. Now I can pop on the kettle and watch the Netflix. But that's exactly what it is. We're not here to scare people. We're just here to bring guidelines into how much physical movement we should be doing. And around the ages of 18 to 65 plus, we should be getting those 2 hours, 30 minutes to about 5 hours. But also what we're seeing from the guidelines is we should be adding in more strength training to our diet or physical activity throughout the week. So that's really going to build muscle and allow you to kind of look after your bones as well. And then from that 65 plus upwards, focusing on balance training as well, so that for the later years in our life, we're not taking falls or, you know, losing our balance when we could be actually working on that at the moment.
Yeah, start small, I say, and build from there. And one of the things I think that's adding to the sedentary lifestyle feeds into your next story, the global stats on the amount of time we spend on social media, because we're constantly distracted. There's often days I wake up, you know, a Saturday and I'm like, right, I'm going to do this, this and this. And hours get eaten up by scrolling once you pick up that phone.
Look, this is definitely a story I didn't want to see or bring to the table, but we do need to know how much being on our phone can actually impact our life. So 2 hours a day is equivalent to 30 days of the year. But in Ireland, we're actually spending on average to 6 hours and 13 minutes a day, which equivalents to 106 days of the year. So just think about that and let that seep in, that we're spending time on our phones, on our devices. We're not out in nature for those hours, making connections, maybe doing things that we love away from our devices. And I think we just need to bring our awareness to what are we actually doing on our phones.
When I get those reports flash up on my phone, sometimes I think when it says you were down to 4 hours or whatever a day, I mean, I wonder what falls under that. Are my replying to emails, WhatsApp groups that are to do with the kids, listening to podcasts? I mean, that could be a good hour, hour and a half of learning. So it's like our, you know, study time. It's like our newspaper time. There is connection in there as well. So this is just the new way, isn't it?
Exactly. That's it as well. Like, we could be spending time on the phone, FaceTiming a friend that's in Australia or something like that. So again, not alarm ourselves with this. But if you feel like you are spending time doom scrolling, really is the alarming part there, then maybe take some time to kind of reduce your screen time, maybe set your phone aside for one day of the week. There's actually something trending on TikTok at the moment, which is called a digital fast. So you might have heard of intermittent fasting. Digital fasting kind of has that same approach as well. Set time limits on your phone, or don't charge your phone next to your bed. I think that's a really good one. Charge it in a different room. If you do feel that you are someone that just spends time aimlessly scrolling.
And it can be soothing, and it does give us that dopamine hit. We just want to make sure that we're not just getting it from the phone and our time spent is not at the expense of some of the other important things you mentioned for our well-being. Now, Leia Healthcare have their Workplace Wellbeing Day coming up on the 25th of April. It is open to the public through Eventbrite, and the schedule is based on the research that Leia Healthcare do with their members about where they are with their health and wellbeing.
Absolutely. So this event is open to the public and for anyone to join. And all of the events that they've put together has come from their Workplace Wellbeing Index. So that is a body of research to find out what's going on in employees and HR leaders' lives. And some of the things that we're seeing are acute anxiety, that rising cost of living, and people wanting to kind of put more emphasis into their professional growth as well, so our careers. And Leah Healthcare have put on 3 panel discussions throughout the day for anybody to attend to really hone in on those 3 areas that people are maybe worried about or they want to explore a bit more. And you can ask questions there on the day to the experts. It's a really, really great event. And in the morning, they'll have a virtual sunrise yoga and a workout for everybody to take part in. So definitely, it's open to the public. Get involved.
Now, I'm biased. I'm host on the day, but there are really brilliant panel discussions. Tell us the 3 main topics and some of the guests on the panels.
Yeah, so our first topic is going to be on Elevating Minds, and we're going to have Dr. Clodagh Campbell, Nilo Murlock and Desi Fitzgerald, who's going to take us through their own experiences when it comes to personal stories or practical skills there as well. So 3 well-known experts in their areas. Then we're going to have Goal Setting for Professional Growth, Una O'Hagan, Linda Barry and Devin Toner. So 2 personal stories in there with Una and Devin, and then Linda Barry is a career consultant, kind of able to navigate your goals around where you want to go with your career. And then to kind of tackle the last one there on the rising cost of living, we've Savor and Save, and it's going to be a panel discussion of Santos O'Gara, Aisling Larkin, who's the wellness chef, taking us through kind of a nutritional version of when it comes to finance. And then Paul Merriman will be taking us through kind of looking at our finances for long-term goals there as well.
Okay, so open to the public. You don't have to be a Leah Healthcare member. You just have to be a member of the public who's interested in health and wellbeing. So just go to Eventbrite and search for what?
Search for Workplace Wellbeing Day, and all of the events will be there on Eventbrite for you.
And finally, this is a good story. Why having a crush is good for us. What impact can that have on our wellbeing?
I thought this was a funny story. So usually when we have a crush, you might feel it, butterflies in the tummy, a bit of a beating heart rate. But what's actually happening is the mammal part of the brain where our reward centers are is being activated. And this can happen from reading a book, laughing at a funny movie, but it can also be activated when we see a crush. And our neurotransmitters produce dopamine, which make us feel good. They make us feel motivated. So there have some physical benefits here as well, that, you know, if you are around your crush, maybe in the workplace or something, you've those kind of dopamine levels giving you more energy, making you more present, and just making you a little bit more motivated in your life, really.
So I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this, but what's the definition of a crush? Does it have to be the person that you're with, or is it like, can it be from the celeb world? You're no strings, as they say, which is so funny because you always assume that the celebrity is going to accept your advances should you ever meet. That just is a given.
Absolutely. Well, I think a crush can be celebrity or whatever it is to you, but just know that it's harmless and it's a bit of fun. And if it makes you feel good, well, act upon it if that's something you want to do as well.
Well, it's nice if you're in a long-term relationship and there's still butterflies involved. I do still get excited when I hear my husband's key going in the door and we're 19 years in, so that's
Claire,
a good thing.
That's so lovely.
I've no need for celebrity strangers. Thanks very much. Emer Daly, where can people find you?
You can find me on Daily Wellbeing on Instagram, and reach out to me if you have any health and wellness stories coming up.
Brilliant. Thank you so much as ever.
Thank you.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, for World Obesity Day 2024 earlier this year, the Irish Coalition for People Living with Obesity, the ICPO, launched their podcast, Irish Men and Obesity. The podcast featured the lived personal experience of 5 Irish men. They're also joined by Professor Donal O'Shea, HSE Clinical Lead for Obesity. The aim of the podcast is to close the gap between the 70% of women seeking help for their obesity compared to only 30% of men. Gerry Barrett is one of the men featured, and he joins me in studio now. Well, Gerry, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Claire, and thank you for the invite to come in and talk to you about this.
And I was listening to the podcast on my way in today, and it was quite moving. Tell me about your involvement in it. How comfortable were you to speak publicly about your experience?
Funny enough, it comes up in the podcast, but I've never had a problem being able to sit with people and talk to them or with them or whatever. I've worked as a telephone man for all my life, and I would have to go in on site and talk to people that I'd never met before. So I've never had a problem talking about it, but I probably held back because I wanted to know more about it and how it affected me. So sometimes I would stay quiet, and then sometimes I'm pretty vocal on it.
And you all sort of recorded separately, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
So you've listened to the podcast, and every single thing said by the other four men you could identify with.
Well, this is it. I mean, obesity can be a strange fellow, because, you know, people think that they're all on their own, especially men. They don't feel that there's other people like them. And when you sit back and listen, I mean, I listened to the other guys, and I could relate so much to what they were saying. And I was saying, I can't believe I didn't say that, because I thought I covered everything. But, you know, when you listen to somebody else's experience of it, you then realise that everybody's going through the same thing. Any issues that we have seem to crop up with everybody. So even though it's an individual thing, to me, it's an individual thing, but it's the same for everybody else out there.
And your story, when you were sharing it, differed from some of the others who had had weight issues since childhood. It was in your 20s that you began to have an issue with weight.
It was, yeah. It was when I left my mammy that the pounds seemed to come on. And I speak about it to, you know, I was young. I was married. We had three kids fairly young. And all I concentrated on was work. And I didn't really pay any attention to me, if you know what I mean. Always tired when I came home, and the work I do, I always had irregular eating habits or eating times. So the weight just seemed to pile on. And by the time I was 27, I was probably at, no, about 30, I was probably at my heaviest.
So what was the turning point then? Because that was, as I said, the aim of the podcast was to try and get men to seek help a little bit more, because they're less likely to. And something Professor Donal O'Shea said on the podcast was that men will be less likely to see it as a condition, to see obesity as a disease and something that, you know, deserves a little care and a little support, yeah, and a little help.
Yeah.
So what was the turning point for you asking for help?
I think the turning point for me, and it didn't come about, I didn't realise it until, well, not that I didn't realise it, but I came across a saying which basically says that we have two lives, and the second life starts when you realise you only have one. So at the time, I was looking at myself and going, okay, what do I do now? Do I continue going the way I am, or do I try and turn things around? So that's what I've done. And it was funny, because I entered a competition with News Talk in 2003 with George Hook, and it was called George Will Fix It, which is probably, yeah, I won't go into that. But anyway, George did fix it for me, and he organised a visit to see a doctor in the Beacon, got checked out, and then he gave me a month's subscription to a gym in town, the New U. And they taught me how to train properly, and it was great. It was a turning point, because I would go to the gym and I would spend an hour and a half there, and when I went to these guys, they went, how long are you spending in the gym? An hour and a half? No, 45 minutes. And then they taught me how to train properly with some nutrition as well. Then I took time out and I went traveling, which was incredible. And then when I came back, got back into work, sitting at a desk, and all the weight just piled back on again. And that's the difference. I mean, as it's a well-known fact that people think all you have to do is eat less and move more. And at that time, I was eating less and I was moving quite a bit, and it helped, but it wasn't the reason why I overate. And that was my introduction to obesity, and the fact that I would need help, that it wasn't just a case of moving more because I enjoyed that.
And I that's something I bang on about all the time. I hate eat less, move more. It's almost judgmental, yeah, straight off the bat. Like, you're not doing enough. Like, this is a lifestyle choice that you made along the way. And it's so much more complex than that. And I think it really feeds into the stigma and the guilt and shame associated with obesity. I mean, even to be honest with you, the press release that I received about this podcast, and I know it's from a very supportive organisation, the Irish Coalition for People Living with Obesity. It's set up by people with obesity. But there were stats at the end about what obesity is costing the health service. I don't get that about other conditions when I get a press release. Yeah. Do you feel that sort of stigma associated with it?
Well, it's funny. It's funny because I always related stigma as, you know, people who would say things to you and they would look at you a certain way. And I don't know whether it's because I was a big guy that I never had that problem. Nobody ever came up to me and said, God, you're overweight, or would you not move more and do less? I've never had that problem. And I don't know whether it was because it was my physical side and they kind of hung back. Whereas what I have found is that people who were more shy than I was would take things like that to heart. And sometimes when people find people like that, they just kind of keep on at them. They keep on saying, would you not do this? Would you not do that? That dress, those clothes don't suit you. Would you not do something about your weight? It's quite simple, you know. So the only stigma that I felt was I went back swimming, you know, as just to get into the water and get some exercise. And I saw people in the pool looking up at me as I walked down to get into the pool. But once I got into the pool, I mean, I was going to say I'm like a whale, but I could swim and I could move in the water because everything was supported. So that's the only real thing that I noticed, that I'm saying to myself, these people are looking at me saying, God, look at the state of him.
Yeah, but were they? I mean, is that as much your head as them?
Exactly.
Because you do, when somebody comes out of the changing rooms, your head does seem to turn.
Yeah.
It's a family, it's a man, it's a woman.
Yeah.
It's instinct, but you sort of felt that it must be a negative.
Yeah, and again, it's when you start dealing with it and then saying, okay, what is this that I have? Why can I not look after it? I'm an intelligent person. I know what I should be doing, which is what I should eat, how I should train. But I didn't join up the dots. I didn't look at why am I eating and, you know, go to people who could advise me on, you know, better nutrition, or even from a psychological point of view, you know, why are you eating that way? Is there something in your past that's brought up, or, you know, do you look at yourself in a different way, or whatever? And as part of Lachlan Sound, the weight management team out in Lachlan Sound, that's really when it changed for me, because they look at obesity from a multidisciplinary thing where they have psychologists, dietitians, doctors, nurses, and I found that I spent more time with the psychologist than I did with most of the other disciplinaries, and I think that's what helped me. That's what finally got it home to me. Because there was things that happened in my past that I never related to. You know, this might be why you're feeling the way you do. Maybe that's why, instead of going, for, you know, if you're sad, I was eating. And if I was happy, I was eating. So from that point of view, food was never a bad thing to me. Well, not mentally, but physically it was.
And as you say, that multidisciplinary, that holistic approach to your health and your well-being. So where are you at now, Gerry?
Well, in 2019, I had a gastric sleeve. I had to lose weight before I went for the gastric sleeve. Then I had it. My medical condition at the time was I had diabetes, type 2 diabetes. I was on a sleep apnea machine. I had AFib, a number of other things. And straight away after the surgery, I was told to stop taking my meds for my diabetes, which again, when I went to my own doctor, it's funny because the doctor I was attending at the time, and every time I got home, my partner would say to me, you know, what did the doctor say about your weight? And I'm going, well, we talked about it, but he didn't really say, Gerry, you need to lose weight. He just sat there and listened, which I didn't realise was a better thing for me, rather than, you know, telling me certain things or what he felt, he was prepared to sit and listen. And it was that doctor that asked me would I be interested in going to Loughlin Sound Weight Management. So that was my journey into the start of it. But again, I had a doctor who sat and listened rather than made any judgments on me or whatever. And having listened to some other people, you know, even when they go to their own family doctor or they go for health checks, some of the things that have been said to them, you know, weren't favourable, and there was stigma involved in that.
Yeah, and that guilt and shame, and that's just so demotivating to anybody getting help for their health. I mean, I love that we live in a more body positive world now where we realise that people do come in all different shapes and sizes, and then there are many factors that can contribute to somebody's weight. But if it is impacting on your health and it is something you want to change, you should be able to reach out and be met with compassion.
Absolutely. I mean, I've changed my attitude towards people suffering with obesity has changed as well, you know, because I didn't see myself as being obese. But then I would look at people in the past and go, God, they'd want to, you know, do so. Even myself, you know, I'd hate to be that size, but I was that size.
Yeah, we're all socially conditioned. Yeah. We really are. Well, Jerry, you look good. And I'm glad you got this full circle moment to come back to News Talk, where it all started.
Exactly.
And thank you for taking part in the podcast, because the more people share their experiences and the more we talk about these things, the more the stigma and the guilt and the shame goes away and people get the help they deserve.
Yeah, and I would like to put it out there. I mean, I've always maintained that if I wanted to know what I should be doing, I should look at what women are doing 10 years ago, because men, I feel, are behind the time. And that's changing now. But I would like men out there who feel that they can't talk, they should go to their doctor or even look up the ICPO website and get in touch with them. And they can support, and we can share experiences, and that will help.
Yeah. Well, look, women have made lots of mistakes in diet culture, and I don't want to go back to there either. But a healthy relationship with body and food, I think, is imperative to everybody. And sometimes that needs support. ICPobesity.org is the website where you'll find all the information. They run support groups, and you'll be able to listen to that Irish Men and Obesity podcast episode in which Jerry features. Jerry Barrett, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, osteoporosis has no symptoms and affects more than 300,000 people in Ireland. Women are more likely than men to develop osteoporosis due to a drop in estrogen levels when a woman reaches menopause, which can lead to bone loss. 75% of fractures or broken bones due to osteoporosis happen in people of that age, and again, mainly women over the age of 65. Osteoporosis Ireland have launched their She Doesn't Deserve a Break campaign, and I'm joined by their ambassador, broadcaster Mary Kennedy, and registered dietitian Orla Walsh. Well, you're both very welcome.
Thank you, Claire.
Mary, can I start with you? And it's such a clever tagline, because there isn't really a woman alive who doesn't feel like she deserves a break. So it kind of catches your attention, and then we're starting this very necessary conversation.
And it's lovely, I think, that this campaign is happening in the spring, because one of the important things about protecting bone health and therefore working towards preventing osteoporosis is exercise. So it's a good time of the year to encourage that. This campaign has been running, I think, now for about 4 years, but normally in the autumn. So this, I think, is a nice new departure. And really, I mean, I'm 69 and I would just hate for me or for people I know to just be so restricted and limited by a fracture or a fall or something like that. And the statistics are not good, Claire. In 2019, for instance, 4,000 people were admitted to hospital in Ireland with a broken hip. And of those 4,000 people, 69% were women. Now, that's not a good statistic. So we women have to be, as you say, post-menopause, very, very careful. It's also a lovely time of life, I think. And it's important to be able to celebrate it and to maintain our independence, and therefore to kind of factor in the whole bone health part of our lives, the same as going for breast check, the same as getting your bloods done, and to keep in touch with, you know, the possibility of our bones becoming more fragile.
And do you think the reason people don't have this awareness or conversation is because of the negative connotation society has set around ageing. I mean, did you have any hesitation in signing up to this campaign because it was 65 plus?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I had no hesitation. But yes, you are right. There is a stigma about ageing. And from my point of view, I just think that every age, every stage in life has a magic and has a wonder about it. And, you know, it's generally... this age is a nice age. It's people who haven't reached it yet that are kind of scared of it and feel there's a stigma attached. It's a very free time of life. It's, you know, most of the bills are paid. You've probably got, you know, opportunity to be with people you love, to travel, and you do not want that to be, you know, impacted by bad health. We're lucky when we have health, good health, and we therefore, and bone health is so much a part of it. But yes, I do agree that there is a feeling of, oh, you know, let's not talk about aging. You know, I have issues around all kinds of things. I even have issues around people talking about anti-aging creams. Why? Why do people not want to age? What's the alternative, actually?
Yeah, and I always focus on it being a privilege. I was only in company with somebody yesterday and they told me about a 33-year-old guy who was going to set up a restaurant with his best friend, and the restaurant's now named after him because he died of COVID at the age of 33. So you never know, you know, to age is a privilege, and you get wiser and more self-assured as you go.
Sometimes when I'm talking to younger people, I mention, say, Princess Diana, who died at 36, an absolute beauty, as did Marilyn Monroe at the same age of 36. If they got a choice to swap, like being 36 and beautiful but gone, with being older and living their life and, you know, being with their family and Diana with her children and her grandchildren, which do you think they'd choose?
Yeah.
So age is a privilege, as you say, and we have to protect it, and we have to keep ourselves as well as possible with exercise, with, you know, keeping in touch with our GP and bone health and you know, nutrition and the things we eat play such an important part.
Well, that's a lovely, seamless introduction. It's so lovely when you interview somebody that's a fellow broadcaster and as professional as Mary.
Well, I'm dying to hear what Orla has to say.
To bring in dietitian Orla Walsh, can we eat for bone health, Orla?
Yeah, it's one of the things that we can do. So it's important with all of these things not to focus on just one area. It's multifaceted, and it's going to be, the programme to keep your bones healthy and protect your bones and maintain them will be different for everyone. And that's why we're encouraging people to go to their GP and go, okay, well, what's my bone healthy plan? But I suppose I love what Mary was saying. It's about keeping women healthy and keeping them independent. And it starts from a young age. And because it starts from birth for a female in particular, although men do still develop osteoporosis, it's important to talk to all the women in our lives. So our daughters, our sisters, our mothers, our grandmothers, or whoever we're lucky to have with us. So there's loads of things we can do for bone health in terms of diet. I think when we look at it, there's important nutrients. Okay, so magnesium helps vitamin D do its job, and vitamin D helps calcium and phosphorus. So they're important nutrients, and vitamin K helps protein. So if we look at it, the nutrients that I'm encouraging people to get enough of for bone health would be calcium, phosphorus, vitamin D, magnesium, vitamin K, protein. That sounds like a tall ask, but if you have three portions of dairy a day, you're getting your daily requirements of calcium, phosphorus, and it really ups your protein. So you've got three of those things in one simple task. In terms of the magnesium and vitamin K, that's found in the likes of green vegetables and nuts and seeds. And of course, the beauty of doing these changes to your diet in regards to bone health is that it's not just going to improve your bone health, it's going to have other knock-on benefits.
And you mentioned calcium there, which I think everybody thinks of when they think of bone health and milk and dairy. Mm. And the landscape has really changed now. We've so many alternatives to milk. And I always think of having you on at the start of me presenting this show when we were kind of busting myths, and almond milk was the big thing. Now it's since moved into oat milk. But I said, is there any problem with that? And you said, well, no, if you like ordering it for preference, or you have another reason why you've decided to go plant-based, that's all fine. But you need to ask yourself, where are you getting things like iodine? And it was like a slap in the face for me. I was like, why am I jumping on board with these trends without really asking what impact it's having on my body? Are there issues with substitute milks?
There are, and some people require them. So it's important to note that they're not like for like. There's nutritional gaps, and the likes of almond milk and oat milk wouldn't provide that protein that I was talking about. And they tend to be fortified with similar nutrients as cow's milk. But I suppose, firstly, you have to check that, are they fortified? And next thing is you have to get it into your bowl or glass. So in other words, how do you do that? If you don't shake the carton loads, some of it will be on the bottom of the carton that you're putting into the wheelie bin at the end of the week. So you have to shake the carton loads. The other thing is that just because there's the same amount of calcium in one versus another doesn't mean it's absorbed into the body in the same way. So another tip I give people is not just shake the carton loads before you add it to the bowl or the cup, but to have a little bit more, because it's not like for like. So we can focus too much on total calcium intakes without considering, okay, can this calcium actually make it its way into our body? But there are non-dairy sources of calcium. The likes of firm tofu tends to be a good source, as well as things like baked beans and kale. And there's a lot of calcium and kale, but more importantly, it's more bioavailable. So there are ways and means around it. And that's why it's important, because we all eat such different diets and have different preferences based on loads of different reasons why we have to go to our GP and go, okay, what's my plan of action?
Yeah, and just bring in that awareness. And something else I think that really can impact on women's health, and I know men or however you identify are not immune, is diet culture. For a long time, women just restrict their calories, and that's the end goal, is reducing calories. And you forget about counting nutrients being far more important for your long-term health.
Yeah, exactly. And dieting with the intention of losing weight, especially when you're not considering, you know, nutrients, can actually lead to bone loss. And it's one of the risk factors. But age is too. So we're all getting older, hopefully, and have that privilege. So it is relevant to everyone. So it is important for men listening to be listening and thinking about their own bone health, but also to be thinking of, what about the women in my life?
And you said, look, it's something you start early. But wherever you are in your journey, is it never too late to begin?
It's never too late to begin, but the journey will be different. And if you have osteoporosis, you know, diet isn't the only cure. It's multifaceted. And that's why it's so important to get it tailored to you. We can give some generic and generalized advice, but really there's nothing better than having a plan individualized to you and your needs. That said, I would say for everyone to focus on getting 3 dairy a day and remembering to take their vitamin D supplement, particularly during winter months.
You mentioned, Mary, that there's a lot of talk in the campaign about, you know, 65 plus being this retirement age and a time for you to fly. So the last thing you want is a fracture holding you back, and it being retirement age. You were quite vocal at the time where you had to retire from the state broadcaster. Mm-hmm. At 65. And I must say, you're very much missed on the nationwide screens.
I miss nationwide as well.
How have you navigated it since and being in retirement age?
To be honest, I didn't want, as you say, to retire at 65. But I was actually talking to somebody who is coming up to and has chosen to retire at 65 yesterday. And I said, you know, it is scary from this side of the fence. But when you actually go there, life is for living. There are so many other opportunities that present themselves, and you have the freedom to do them. We spoke earlier about, you know, travel and spending nice time, but there are also maybe projects that you can become involved in. I've been working with TG Cahir, but not all the time, because I do feel that this is a very important stage in life where I don't want to get to the end of life and say, well, nobody gets to the end of life and says, I wish I'd worked more. But there are a lot of people who get to the end of life and say, I wish I'd worked less. And there's also a kind of an ethos, which I think is changing, and maybe the pandemic had something to do with a different mindset in people. But there are a lot of people who look on kind of being busy, busyness, as almost like a badge of honor. And I think that there's like we have to accept the fact that being is important, and breathing and going for walks and meeting your friends for a cup of coffee or a glass of wine and just living life and enjoying yourself is so, so important. And that really is one of the messages of this campaign. Don't let anything stand in the way of having a full and lovely life. And I have to say that the Irish Osteoporosis Society, they have a very good website, and there's a lot of information there.
Amazing. Well, I mean, you are at 69 and fabulous. And you're right. There's so much more to us than what we do. That's yeah. not who we are. Yeah. So I'm very excited to see what you do next. Thank you so, so much. And to give that website, irishosteoporosis.ie, where you'll find out more information about osteoporosis. And you can also make an appointment at your GP. To dietitian Orla Walsh and fabulous Mary Kennedy, thank you so much for coming on. So that's it for Live and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aidan McKelvey, and Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.